Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I think that Bitcoin has lost a lot of mind share and a lot of market share to these other ecosystems. I think people want to do these things. And so the fact that people have been unable to do these things on Bitcoin has sort of, you know, drawn them away from the Bitcoin ecosystem to these other ecosystems.
This episode of The Protocol is sponsored by the Stellar Community Fund.
Dive deep into the blockchain realm with The Protocol podcast, with CoinDesk founding editor of The Protocol newsletter, Brad Cowan, and tech journalists Sam Kessler and Margot Nykerk. They unravel the intricate technologies powering cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum, one block at a time. Just a reminder, CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice.
Hello and welcome to the Protocol Podcast. I'm Brad Cowan here with my co-hosts Margot Nykerk and Sam Kessler. We're excited to dive into today's show with the latest news and developments in technology behind crypto and blockchains. First, please don't forget to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The Protocol, on Coindesk.com. And let's dive right into it. We do have in the house today, Casey Rodemar, just fresh off of the Runes launch just a few days ago. Casey claimed to us just as we were talking before the show started that this is his first media appearance since the Runes launch. So
that's right. The freshest scoop possible.
You heard it here on the Protocol. Well, Casey, I mean, this is number two for you, I would say, based on kind of response so far. You're two for two in terms of releasing pretty, you know, probably the most impactful protocols on the Bitcoin blockchain in 2 years. So yeah, we're pretty lucky to have you. I thought maybe we could just start. I would love to hear you describe where you were during the launch and, you know, what you were doing, what you were looking at, and kind of what your reactions or thoughts were as that was happening.
I think like everybody else, I was at home watching mempool.space, which is a Bitcoin blockchain explorer that people use to watch pending transactions, blocks, fees, all that. Just watching the fees spike up, they got pretty wacky. I knew that they were going to get, you know, reasonably wacky, that there were going to be some hijinks, but the actual level of wackiness and hijinks was completely unprecedented, especially the fees that the highest paying transactions paid in the first block. I don't remember, but the actual fee rates, but it was many millions of dollars were spent in that block. It was pretty wacky.
Yeah, I was just looking at, you know, there's a bunch of various dashboards that people are making. I saw one on Dune, and it looked, based on the data, 2,075 BTC and Runes fees so far. That works out to $134 million.
Yeah, absolute insanity. I feel a little guilty that I, you know, encouraged people to take that money and light it on fire and send it to the miners. But, you know, here we are.
Well, I mean, speaking of you know, lighting money on fire, what's really happening is people are just creating money, right? But I mean, again, there's a couple different dashboards for this, but I was looking at one called Runes Market Cap, and that one puts the market cap at $440 million. But then there was another one called Sat Screener, which puts Tufu. I hope that's not like some completely dirty thing that I don't know what it is, but Zifu. And that one is $2.34 billion market cap. I mean,
yeah, I would take those market cap numbers with a grain of salt. I assume that the markets are incredibly illiquid. I think if you actually tried to sell everything or sell even a significant fraction of that, it would nuke the price. But those numbers are good for me. I publicly committed to commit seppuku 1 month after launch if the market cap does not reach $1 billion. So it looks like, according to at least one dashboard, I'm in the clear. So that's
good. You're going
to
make it?
I think I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it, yeah.
Well, does it have to still be at $1 billion at that point in time, or just at some point?
I think it still has to be $1 billion. I mean, that'd be pretty weak if it was sub $1 billion 1 month from launch and I didn't kill myself. So yeah, it's got to go there and stay there.
Well, all right. So another data point here, 7,995 etchings. So that's like a unique token.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the reasons that I make protocols is so that I can get everybody to use my very funny words. So yeah, when you create a rune, this is termed etching a rune, which sets the name. Names of runes are unique. They also have unique parameters, which includes whether or not they have an open mint, i.e. if at some point in the future, anybody can sort of create a transaction to claim some amount of that rune, how much of that rune they get when they mint it, whether or not the rune is pre-mined, i.e. the etcher has themselves allocated some amount of runes to themselves. So yeah, you etch a rune, and then you can mint a rune if there is an open mint, at which point you just get some of that rune. This was an allocation mechanism that was popularized by BRC20. I think that the idea that, you know, the traditional model is that somebody makes a token, and they claim that they're going to do all these fancy things, that they're going to deliver some sort of utility. And then they use that as an excuse to sort of dump on investors slowly while delivering absolutely nothing. I mean, if you look at the vast majority, 99% of blockchains are completely worthless. If you look at CoinMarketCap, you'll see that there are like quote unquote serious blockchains like Avalanche and Polkadot that are below the market cap of Doge. So, you know, degens really, you know, prefer not to see a massive team allocation and get dumped on. So the idea here is because these things are all, you know, not delivering any utility at all, you don't need a team. So the team allocation is like an inefficiency. So you just let everybody print the token, and that's just more efficient. You know, it's better for the degens.
And let's just talk about these degens, because I, you know, I've heard you talk about this on some of your other podcasts that you've been on, including Hell Money, which is so good. You know, so much fun to listen to.
Yeah, Hell Money podcast, wherever fine podcasts are sold. You know, YouTube, we make videos.
Yeah, and I did. I mean, you were talking about, I think, on one of them recently about how when you started, you had, I think, like 10 people who listened or something like that.
Yeah.
But at any rate, the degens, who are these degens? Are these just the same degens who were on Ethereum and then Solana pumping meme coins or you know, BNB chain, or who do you think these people are who are doing, who are, you know, on runes?
I think definitely there's overlap in the degen, you know, population from these other chains. I think probably a lot of them are also degens who were sort of like activated or became degens when Ordinals launched. I think there was a lot of Bitcoin people who sort of wanted to do these, you know, degenerate activities, but didn't particularly want to do them on other chains. They didn't want to learn other ecosystems or leave the other ecosystems. And then Ordinals and Inscriptions and now Runes have have provided an outlet for these degens on Bitcoin. So I assume that there's some of them that are, you know, newly minted Bitcoin degens, but then I think a lot of them are the same people who are on other chains.
So the pitch makes a lot of sense to me. You're basically saying, all right, all of these other ecosystems that are ostensibly trying to do stuff with tech are really just launching coins that people are gambling on anyway, and just allocating some of the money to developers. And so the idea is to just make this whole. So if you take it that, you know, all this other stuff is kind of BS, you know, the idea of runes is just like, let's just make it all about the memes. Let's cut out all of the, you know, all of that overhead. Is
yeah,
that right?
Definitely. And like, I wouldn't argue that, you know, meme coins and degeneracy and gambling and speculation is like is the greatest activity on earth. But I do think that, you know, a lot of the worst kind of project is one which claims, and they don't have to claim dishonestly, like they can believe it, right? They can mm-hmm. either be scammers or they can believe their claim that they're creating the future of finance, that they're going to create this thing that is an incredible utility. They're going to create a metaverse. And then normal people will see that claim and they will go, okay, well, that sounds great. And buy that token, right? I think that those kinds of projects are much more likely to do a lot more damage to normal people because they think that they're, you know, walking into a stock market and in fact, they're just walking into a casino. So the sort of purpose of runes is to be as straightforward as possible to be like, no, this is a degenerate casino, like have fun, but don't, you know, lose your shirt. And I hope that to some degree outcompetes these other, you know, projects that are making these like ridiculous claims. I mean, the truth is like 99.9% of, you know, quote unquote cryptocurrency, like simply doesn't work at all. There's just nothing there. Like blockchains are not good for doing most anything, right? And so the vast number of projects just will never deliver anything of value. So I think it's much better to be honest and kind of distill it down, you know, like let's, instead of gambling and fraud, maybe we can just do gambling. That's the desire.
So that makes sense. But one, you know, obvious question becomes if you, you know, further associate now Bitcoin, not just crypto broadly, but the blockchain, you know, I know Bitcoin's like, hey, we're not crypto, it's Bitcoin. So Bitcoin, is there any fear that regulators are going to look at this and inevitably when people get dumped on, I mean, it is a casino, they're going to take a, you know, sharper eye to this technology that it sounds like you think does have some fundamentally important use case?
Yeah, I definitely think that Bitcoin is extremely important, extremely valuable as a sort of credibly neutral global settlement layer. I think the regulatory concerns, my personal opinion is probably that's not so much of a worry, right? Regulators have always gone off after individual sort of coin issuers. They've gone after individual projects. I think it'd be pretty unprecedented for them to be like, oh, well, people are doing, you know, bad things on Bitcoin. We should, you know, go after the blockchain in some sort of concerted way. And in reality, I think that the activity that the regulators would probably be more concerned about on Bitcoin, and the reason that Bitcoin is a threat to government power is simply the Bitcoin, you know, the Bitcoin token itself, right? This allows people to evade taxes, to avoid sanctions, to avoid government control, to have some financial privacy. All things that I think are good, maybe not avoiding sanctions if it's like North Korea, but I'm in favor of people like not paying their taxes and the government not knowing what they're doing. And so I think that that is the actual sort of existential threat to the government that Bitcoin poses. And I don't think that they're going to get, you know, particularly incensed about the fact that people can, you know, do meme coins on Bitcoin. Certainly not to the point that that would motivate a, you know, state level attack on the base chain itself.
So the, you know, the follow-up question to that just becomes, why Bitcoin then? Why not just let people do, you know, the casino stuff that they're already doing on Solana, on Ethereum, on Aptos, on Sui, on all of these ecosystems?
Yeah, I mean, a couple reasons. So I think that Bitcoin has lost a lot of mind share and a lot of market share to these other ecosystems. I think people want to do these things. And so the fact that people have been unable to do these things on Bitcoin has sort of you know, drawn them away from the Bitcoin ecosystem to these other ecosystems. You know, I think that there's, so yeah, increased use, also increased fees. As the Bitcoin subsidy declines, which is the new Bitcoin created in every block, we just had a halving, so it went from 6.25 to 3.125. So as that subsidy of new coins created per block declines, fees must rise to replace that subsidy. Otherwise, the chain is insecure. So I think that having more users, having more mindshare, having more fee revenue is all good for Bitcoin. And also, like, I think that there's another world in which if you had the ability to issue tokens on Bitcoin, you know, a long time ago, the ecosystem may have developed such that everybody would see the tokens and things on Bitcoin as having the most value. And a lot of other chains would wind up trying to figure out how to be like layer twos or bridges or whatever, so that people could have more functionality with those tokens on other chains. So yeah, ultimately, I think it's good for fees, it's good for adoption and users. And so I'm surprised that this has happened, but it seems like ordinals and sort of the whole activity in the Bitcoin space has sparked off a lot of interest in Bitcoin L2s and technological development. So I think that's good too, because as people want to do the things on Bitcoin, they want to do more sophisticated, more complicated things on Bitcoin. Lots of people start working on technologies to enable them to do those things on Bitcoin in a lower fee or a more expressive way.
So, you know, if I can just ask one more thing on this point, like, just to play devil's advocate, it does seem like you're saying fees, you know, mind share, users, those are all things that Bitcoin is, you know, lacking relative to some of these other ecosystems that have gone really far down that kind of, you know, DeFi rabbit hole, meme mm-hmm. coin rabbit hole. So why, you're basically saying, like, why not bring that to Bitcoin in order to, you know, prop up all of these things or push down fees and so on and so forth. But there does seem like there's still this kind of underlying tension that I'm curious how you kind of like reconcile in your own mind, where it's like, are you basically saying, because you did just speak positively of L2s, you're saying it's gambling that is necessary to, you know, bring this excitement, bring these fees down, bring these users, mindshare, so on. Like, is that just like kind of like an undermining of the core Bitcoin thesis if it can't do this stuff without all of these things that you take issue with on other ecosystems?
Oh, I mean, I think Bitcoin would probably be, you know, fine without ordinals and inscriptions and runes. I wouldn't say that, you know, I'm like saving Bitcoin. I'm saying that, you know, I'm doing a small thing to shore up, you know, some parts of, you know, Bitcoin's weaknesses. But no, I think Bitcoin would probably be fine. The fees do worry me in the sense of like the halving, fees cutting every 4 years, it is very aggressive. And so I think that all sorts of use is good. And I wouldn't want to sort of wait around until that is a problem. But yeah, no, I think Bitcoin's core value proposition is very strong. And it is, you know, head and shoulders above all the other cryptocurrencies in the ecosystem. And if you look at the level of care with which Bitcoin is developed, the quality of engineers, the amount of quality contributions, and the sort of conservatism with which the chain is developed, it's far, far ahead of everything else in the ecosystem. And this is just, you know, supporting, you know, one or two very small things.
I wanted to ask just real quick, you know, you bring up the halving, and that just happened last week. What, you know, I'm sure you've lived through various halvings right now, and runes was such a big part of this one. And there's been like a renewed interest in Bitcoin because of all these L2s and, you know, ordinals last year, and then now also the Bitcoin ETF. So there's this like larger mainstream interest. I feel like we've seen all sorts of mainstream news sources cover this as well. I want to get your perspective on how this halving has been different compared to previous ones.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think the main thing is just that, I mean, it seems like it's pretty the same. The halving is really a boring event, you know? It's not a technical risk. The behavior that changes in Bitcoin is really just a few small lines of code, like literally like four lines of code that calculate the new subsidy for each block and just gets cut in half every, you know, every 4 years. So it's a very boring event. I think The only difference this time was that there were all these sort of new participants in the ecosystem that had entered the ecosystem, you know, a little more than a year ago when Ordinals went live originally. So yeah, I think there's just a lot of new fresh faces, but all in all, it's a very like boring event. And it's always nice, you know, as developers, I know that Bitcoin can cope with high fees. I know that the network is self-regulating, that it has this nice property of what's called back pressure, where, you know, lots of people are trying to transact and there's back pressure in the form of fees that prevents the system from getting overloaded. So it was nice to see that in action, but yeah, all things told, you know, it's another halving. There's going to be another one in 4 years, you know, until, you know, 2142 or whatever it is. It's a pretty, you know, routine event.
Yeah, no, that's interesting you say that, because I write a lot about Ethereum. And so with the merge and with all these different upgrades, like the developers are always happy to hear when it's like a boring event, because it means that it worked. But, you know,
every day is a boring day in Bitcoin, which is great.
Well, I guess. Yeah. Well, maybe all this new stuff will bring some excitement back to it. But, you know, so I also wanted to ask, because I, you know, I heard you on the Bankless podcast, and I'm sort of getting here at you know, some comparisons with Ethereum and Tron you had made. I don't remember the exact wording that you had mentioned, but basically from the picture that I was getting is that there's been a lot of mistakes or, you know, scamminess, gambling on these ecosystems, that people get into crypto and they go, you know, go to these chains and they avoid Bitcoin. But sort of what Sam was getting at here earlier is asking, okay, well now you're, a lot of this is being brought to Bitcoin. So like, I'm trying to sort of understand the connection here. What is it different about these same sort of technologies on these, you know, not as, as, and please, like, you know, correct me for my wording, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but from my interpretation, it was like these scammier blockchains, like if that's all happening on these other blockchains, why is it okay on Bitcoin?
Oh, I mean, I certainly wouldn't make the argument that anything that's not okay on other blockchains is okay on Bitcoin. So yeah, I mean, I think one thing is that the sort of the culture of the community is a little bit different. It is not a culture where people really make serious claims about, you know, crazy claims about some utility that doesn't exist, which is sort of my primary complaint about a lot of this activities on other blockchains. Meme coins on Bitcoins are the same as meme coins on other blockchains. But my hope is that due to the culture, we see less of these claims that somebody's going to make a token that you should buy because it's going to do something. Currently, we see claims of people saying that you should buy this token because it's related to some funny story that I wrote a long time ago, or it's a dog coin or something like that. I'm much more positive about those activities on Bitcoin than I am on other blockchains. And also, like, yeah, there's a lot of activity that I'm not a fan of wherever it happens, but I think that Bitcoin is good for the world. So if ultimately that brings users to Bitcoin, it brings mindshare to Bitcoin, I think that those negative sum activities are possibly positive sum in taken in whole with improving Bitcoin's adoption.
Mm-hmm. And then also, like, another thing that you had mentioned on Bankless was that you don't think that Ethereum could stand a nation state type of attack. And I thought that was really interesting, because I have actually like talked a lot to like someone on the team at the Ethereum Foundation whose job it is to you know, find these code, like these vulnerabilities in the code, so that like Ethereum can withstand a nation state attack. And so it's interesting, because, you know, they I'm using the EF here as an example, because they've deployed like a bunch of resources, they've hired a bunch of people who were in government, you know, working on these kind of things. So what is it specifically that you think that Bitcoin, like, why this Bitcoin could withstand it versus and not Ethereum?
Yeah, so there's a few things. So I think that there are just components to Ethereum that are very fragile and very centralized. So one with Ethereum staking protocols, I would have to go and look up all the, you know, numbers on this. But for example, there are a few very large sort of proxy stakers on Ethereum that individual ETH holders will like deposit their ETH to be staked by this other entity, and then they can receive a token, which allows them to get liquidity for their staked ETH. So that there's a small number of very large pools of capital that if a nation state was able to take control over those pools of capital, they would have significant sway in which blocks were produced. So that's one aspect. Another aspect is that the vast majority, I think almost all of Ethereum's blocks are compiled by a centralized entity. I always get this wrong. I think it's like Flashbots or something. But this is the entity that essentially constructs the most profitable block templates and just tells miners, like, okay, this is the block template that you should, or Ethereum stakers or whatever they call it. This is the block template that should be the next block. I will give you a cut of the fees from this block if you make this block the next block. I think that that's one entity that constructs, you know, I think like 70% or more of Ethereum's blocks.
Maybe just to clarify, that's not exactly how. Just to
A podcast. Like,
there's an infrastructure that everybody uses, but there's like a bunch of different entities that use that infrastructure.
Yeah,
I've written a bunch about how that's centralized. To be fair, but just for the sake of clarity,
right? Yeah, but like one entity that constructs the blocks that are going to be used by miners?
So, it's a bit of an aside, but basically what happens on Ethereum is you have a bunch of, you know, people who, like, theoretically the idea of how it works is you have stakers who are constructing blocks, meaning they take things from the mempool, from the queue of transactions, and then they order them into blocks. Mm-hmm. What people have started doing is they're like, hey, what if I put my own transaction as a validator at the top? I can, you know, front run people, and I can run them really effectively because I can see what order everything's going to be in. I set the order. So you have Flashbots that came in to kind of solve, but also, depending on who you ask, make that problem worse by creating this middleware that all of these validators, also called stakers, use, where it's a third-party marketplace of, they're called builders and searchers, that compete with one another to create those templates, create those orders, create blocks, and then give them to validators, but they have to kind of compete. It's still a competitive marketplace. You have a few builders that do kind of monopolize the market. Monopoly isn't the word because there's a few, but I think the software itself is used by everybody. Okay. So there's a difference there. It's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that just made things more complicated or less.
No. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and also this is the case where I would really have to do more informed research. But yeah, so this is an additional, you know, centralizing component that maybe could be exploited. And then also the technical complexity of Ethereum is just such that I am not super confident that there are not just outright bugs and vulnerabilities in the algorithm. Also, I think proof of stake is very centralizing. If you have some amount of stake in a network, by just doing nothing, you will maintain that percentage of stake, which is very different from Bitcoin mining, where you must continually expend capital to maintain your hash rate, right? If you have 50% of network hash rate and you don't do anything, the default state is for your hash rate to decline as, you know, your miners go offline, as you're not paying the energy bills or whatever. You must actively expend capital to keep that up. So Ethereum, you have some percentage of stake. The default is for you to just keep that percentage of stake if you keep that staked on the network. That is an additional centralizing factor. So there's all these centralizing factors for Ethereum, which make me sort of think that it would not withstand serious attack or serious regulatory interference. Additionally, like the centralization of the Ethereum Foundation on development decisions, they basically just railroad users through hard fork after hard fork, and there isn't really a meaningful way for users to opt out. If you compare this with Bitcoin, where the developers have to like beg the users, like, please, like, adopt my soft fork, and everybody has to be very sure that it's a good idea. This is obviously a slower pace of development, but it is a more conservative pace of development. So yeah, all these things make me think that Ethereum probably can't withstand a nation state attack, which makes it less interesting to me, because I think that's actually the entire point of this whole cryptocurrency thing. Like, the government is the enemy. And if you cannot withstand an attack from your enemy, like, what are you doing? Like, get off the battlefield.
That's really interesting. Casey, just to kind of push it back towards runes, I think you were talking about on your last Hell Money podcast with Raph about a lot of the the auditing and you know, checking of the code that you did.
Not enough, but we did check it a lot.
A lot of it, right. And I'm just curious, since the launch, have you found any bugs or have you had issues that you had to deal with? Maybe that might be interesting to hear about.
Yeah. I have a friend. He shall remain nameless because he's a very private person, but he's the smartest person I know. And if you ask people who know me and him, he's the smartest person they know. So he's way smarter than me. We paid him to look over the code, before launch. He found a bunch of bugs, including one that we fixed, but then a bunch of people were running an old version of the code a few days ago. So I think like half the network just kind of went offline. Because they hadn't updated to the latest version. They then updated the latest version and everything is fine. So that was a bug that existed that was found. Aside from that,
and that was what, like Saturday or Sunday? Or
yeah, Saturday or Sunday. It was a divide by zero. You know, classic bug. You know, just really one of the all-time greats. And then there really hasn't been a lot else that has been, you know, really critical. The only two issues that come to mind is that people were creating transactions with very high fees. And I didn't know that Bitcoin Core has a setting to reject very transactions that pay what it think is too high of a fee in that transaction. So these transactions were being constructed by Ord, which is our software, and then getting sent to Bitcoin Core and then getting rejected, which is sort of a bad user experience. But it's pretty minor. It didn't affect a ton of people. And then also one thing in the mint logic where the wallet was being a little bit too conservative about when it could mint. It would think that a mint was not open one block in advance. So it's a little slower to let people mint. But all told, it's actually been very smooth. The software is hard to use. Like, it does kind of suck. But no horrific bugs so far.
Okay, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Have a blockchain project idea and need funding to make it happen? Look no further. The Stellar Community Fund is here to help bring your project to life on the Stellar Network. This year alone, over $10 million in XLM awards have been allocated across more than 100 innovative projects. And your idea could be next. Approved project submissions can receive up to $100,000 in XLM per project. So head over to communityfund.stellar.org to get started.
Calling all developers. Score a Consensus 2024 Developer Pass for just $109, but act fast. Only a limited number of these passes are available. You may have heard that Consensus ain't for devs, but here's why you're wrong. Consensus is the only place you can fully immerse yourself in a multi-chain environment and learn directly from 20-plus chains, including Arbitrum, Chainlink, Solana, and more. Enjoy 3 days of intensive learning with technical talks, 40-plus expert speakers, and 20-plus in-depth workshops, including dedicated half-days for Ethereum and Bitcoin, and 3 full days of programming on our Protocol Village stage. Consensus 2024 is happening May 29th through 31st in Austin, Texas. Don't miss your chance to network at curated developer meetups, find new career opportunities, and explore hundreds of side events and hacker houses around town. Grab your $109 developer pass today, but remember, this exclusive offer is limited. Visit consensus.coindesk.com now to secure your developer pass before they're gone. Explore the epicenter of blockchain innovation at Consensus 2024. And we're back with Casey Rottermeier.
Incredible.
Casey, one of the things that we've written about a lot is, and you hinted at it, developers begging people to adopt their soft forks and, you know, how hard it is to get a BIP number. In fact, I we just breaking. I don't know if you heard that OpCat just got a bit number, and it's not the fake bit number.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like 367 or something.
All right, there we go. Yeah, so for the BIPs, the BIP repo, BIP stands for Bitcoin Improvement Proposal. It is a repository that's maintained on GitHub, which sort of archives documentation and technical proposals related to Bitcoin. For a long time, the repo only had one editor. He was very overworked. It was very slow for things to get merged. But day before yesterday, Monday, four new BIP editors were proposed, four or five new BIP editors. And they've been merging PRs and doing a lot of work and commenting on issues. So that's been really great to see. So yeah,
this
that's
was
awesome.
Roast Beef. I'm not sure what that person's actual name is.
Lalu, his last name is Nigerian and very hard
to
pronounce.
Okay, interesting. But yeah, that's his name on the.
He's one of the main developers at Lightning Labs on the Lightning
okay.
protocol.
Interesting.
But
yeah.
Roast Beef, okay. Kanzeray, John Attack, Merch, all new BIP editors. And
yeah.
They're longstanding community members, so it's great.
According to the repository, Roast Beef was the one who assigned the new BIP number. But aside from that, I mean, that's just the first step of even beginning to think about whether that would ever get merged, right? And so I'm curious, one of your breakthroughs, it seems like, has been the conscious decision that you just got to make do with what you got. I mean, you just kind of built into, you know, I mean, with Ordinals, you just kind of built it on there. And now here again, you're just kind of building it on there, not asking for any changes. I'm curious if you think that is kind of realistically the only option for Bitcoin.
Well, I do think that it is the only option for weird things like ordinals, inscriptions, and runes. That I would not even advocate that those should be added to the Bitcoin base layer. I don't think that Bitcoin Core should concern itself with these sort of higher level asset protocols. I mean, only if runes got like massively systemically important would I say that, okay, maybe the consensus rules should be amended such that, you know, certain kinds of invalid transactions aren't accepted into blocks. I mean, but that is like a, you know, crazy, implausible future scenario. But yeah, for a lot of things, I think it is the appropriate way to develop on Bitcoin is to avoid trying to change Bitcoin because it's very hard and it's necessarily very conservative, and just figure out how to do it on top of Bitcoin without modifications. I've been in Bitcoin for a long time. I've looked at the process for getting Bitcoin changed, and it's a oftentimes very contentious, very slow, very political process that I would really rather like drink poison and jump off a bridge than participate in. So yeah, I always build things on top. But yeah, there are a lot of core upgrades to Bitcoin that cannot be made without changes to the base layer, or you can only make much more inferior versions of them without changing the base layer. So yeah, I think there are a lot of changes to the base layer that would be nice. And I think that there's been a lot of interest and activity in the last couple of years. I think it helps a lot that right now there are a number of soft fork proposals that people are interested in. There's OpCat, there's OpCTV, there's APO, and I think that the fact that there are a bunch of things on the table makes it more likely that we will get one or more soft forks soon. I would actually be surprised if in 2 years we hadn't enabled at least one new thing on Bitcoin, because it seems like there's developing sort of momentum in that direction.
And you know, one of the other things on a related note that's got people excited is Robin Linus's BitVM, and it's the same principle there, right? Which is that you don't need to make any changes to Bitcoin
right.
Core in order to do that. And a lot of people are thinking that that could facilitate the layer two development. And you talked about that earlier. I'm curious if you think that is ultimately where runes would end up on some kind of layer two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people, a lot of what people want layer twos for is even higher frequency degeneracy that, you know, centers around tokens. And if you want a token to exist on an L2 and be able to go back to the L1, you know, back and forth or move between L2s, it needs to be able to settle on the base chain. It needs to be able to exist on the base chain so that it can go from the base chain to an L2, back to the base chain to another L2. And so I think that if L2s become popular, it will be very natural that Runes goes to L2s and probably gets very high use on L2s with ever more advanced forms of gambling and speculation. Hyper gambling.
Where else do you see these L2s going? Like, what other kind of things do you think they're going to accommodate?
I don't know. I guess I am, you know, my default posture towards these kinds of things is just one of skepticism that the UI is going to be good enough for it to get a lot of use. I was very optimistic about the Lightning Network. And I think that the level of adoption so far of the Lightning Network has been a bit disappointing, especially the, you know, non-custodial individual users using the Lightning Network. It is very hard to make a Lightning Network wallet, which does not sort of expose some of the underlying like limitations or the underlying ways that the Lightning Network works. You know, you have this wallet, you can sort of paper over these things, but underneath you still have channels opening and closing. You still have on-chain transactions that need to be made. So my sort of default assumption is that L2s might be the same way, that they might kind of have these usability limitations. But this is not a informed opinion. I hope I'm wrong. And in which case, I mean, I think we'll see the same things that we see on other chains. I think we'll see, you know, somebody build a Solana L2 that is just, you know, million miles a minute degeneracy, and that will just sort of exist as a venue for people to take their Bitcoin assets.
My last question just on that is just around, like, do you see, so you seem to have certainty that these other ecosystems aren't, you know, fulfilling their promises. They're not going to work. Ethereum centralized for all these reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't seen smart contracts really lead to the kinds of use cases that are world changing in the way that their developers promise they'll be. So people are pouring money into these tokens based on false, unfulfilled promises, so on and so forth. But you don't have that certainty when you talk about these L2s on Bitcoin. Like, you do seem to have some optimism that the UX will be such that it does prove useful.
Well, okay. Yeah, to be clear, like, I think it's likely that we might see on these L2s exactly the same things that we see on these other ecosystems, you know, like L2s, which are sort of nominally decentralized, but in reality are very vulnerable to attack, like Ethereum L2s. A lot of them are just sort of glorified multisigs at this point. I think it's very likely that we'll just recapitulate that kind of stuff. I think possibly the most, yeah, I wonder what would be like the most useful L2. I think probably the most like legitimate use of crypto aside from Bitcoin itself is stablecoins, right? Because they give people access to payments. And unfortunately, the most popular stablecoin as of this moment, if things haven't changed, is Tether on Tron, right? Which is like just a kind of silly combo. So it is the case, though, that Tether offers very, very low fees, and Tether is like a fully backed, fully centralized stablecoin, but it does provide users what they want. So maybe I have some optimism that we'll see something like that on Bitcoin, like a high frequency sidechain that lets people transact in a relatively high quality backed stablecoin. I guess that would be good. But yeah, no, I mean, I think the one thing that Bitcoin L2s can do that other L2s or other ecosystems can't do is scale the trust minimized transfer of Bitcoin, the asset itself. I think that is possibly the only thing that is really like an unalloyed good that I would expect to come out of these L2s. If we could get an L2 that enabled a good user experience while letting people instantly transfer Bitcoin for low fees, that would be phenomenal. And that would be, I think, very, very good for Bitcoin and ultimately very good for the world.
Casey, I heard you mention that you do see, or you did, this is before the launch, you saw Runes becoming the default fungible token protocol or standard on Bitcoin. And so you're talking about stable coins here. I mean, do you see somebody trying to launch a stable coin via Runes?
I mean, it'll probably happen. It's an interesting question because there was actually Tether was actually originally on Bitcoin. There's a very old protocol. I think it was called MasterShares and later called the OmniLayer. Which was an asset issuance protocol on Bitcoin, and Tether was originally issued on the OmniLayer that sort of settled on Bitcoin. The OmniLayer got almost no usage. I don't know enough about the OmniLayer to know what its problems were, but yeah, it got almost no usage, and then Tether retired Tether on Bitcoin. So, you know, it could be that there's no market demand for it, and that's why it went away. It could be that there were problems with the OmniLayer that made it not worth running, and that's why it went away. If it's that latter case, then yeah, it is possible that we could see stablecoins on Bitcoin. And even if Tether doesn't do it, I'm sure some degenerate will be like, oh yeah, stable Runes, baby, let's go. Like 10% management fee, why not? So well, yeah, it'll probably happen.
I mean, just to take it from there, going back to one of your earlier points about, you know, and different people have different opinions about a lot of this stuff, obviously, but so-called legit projects, maybe in some of the other ecosystems or, you know, people who are bona fide developers with real credentials who are plausibly, honestly, trying to make good projects for humanity, right? And then they launch a token for whatever reason. I mean, there's nothing to prevent people from doing that with Runes, right?
Certainly not. No, it's a free market. Let's go.
And so, I mean, do you expect some projects to take advantage of that?
Probably. I hope they can just get outcompeted by the memers, you know? Like, why buy a token that is like, ooh, the metaverse or whatever, when there's a token with a funny picture of a dog? So hopefully the memers can outcompete those people.
And one related thing regarding the memers. I mean, you expressed some concern, I think, in your last Hell Money podcast episode that Runes might be a flop. And that, you know, maybe Bitcoin wasn't the best place for meme coiners for various reasons. And now we have seen this incredible uptake, at least in the first early days. I'm curious if you see, you know, what we've seen so far, if you think it's going to be, if it's going to be sustained.
I think it still could certainly be a flop. You know, there was very high interest initially. Fees have gone down enormously already. I think they're back to the sort of the pre-halving fee rate. So it could easily still be a flop. And the sort of the thesis of tokens on Bitcoin is an interesting one. Like, I think that inscriptions, they really did something very different from NFTs on other chains. They really provided these strong guarantees that your content was on chain. And they provided a sort of simplicity to how it works, that I think really provides a compelling benefit over tokens on other chains. Runes, I think, are much more like incremental. They're like BRC20, which already exists, but more efficient. They're actually much, much more efficient in terms of the transaction fees that you'll wind up paying to do these transactions. But, you know, how things develop in the future is hard to say. I do think that among all the Bitcoin fungible token protocol standards, I think Runes is the most appealing. The landscape kind of looks like BRC20, which is the sort of early like meme coin protocol that was built on inscriptions. BRC20 is very inefficient. And they're doing all sorts of like weird stuff with the protocol now that I don't think is going to work out. Then there's a bunch of other sort of like ordinals adjacent protocols, like the pipe protocol and BRC 420 and all that stuff. I don't think a lot of those have gotten very significant adoption. Then there's two sort of more serious protocols, which one is RGB, which is a Bitcoin fungible token protocol and smart contracts platform. I think RGB is very over-engineered and has a lot of UI problems that people will realize that it has. I did a podcast, How Money podcast on this, just talking to two developers working on RGB. My sort of overall opinion of RGB is that it's way, way too complicated. It's also been in development hell for a long time. It's been in development for like literally 6 years, which kind of gives you an indication of how complicated it is. And there's Taproot Assets by Lightning Labs. I think that possibly has the best chance if they're able to announce a really strong stablecoin partnership and get that stablecoin transferring on the Lightning Network using Taproot Assets. In that case, I do think that would have like a fighting chance. But as things stand now, I think Runes is just the simplest, most efficient, easiest to understand protocol. So I at the moment, I do expect that if there is a fungible token protocol standard on Bitcoin, it winds up being Runes.
And Casey, you have talked a lot about how your consternation about the potentially horrendous names that people would give Runes 0 through 9, right? So much so that you obsessed to the point that you actually named the first one just to make sure it wasn't horrible, I think were your words. But I'm curious what you think now that you can have seen, you know, some of which are not nameable here on a PG blockchain tech podcast. What do you think about some of the names that people have been coming up with?
The degens are really bad at coming up with names. I mean, they're bad. They're not good. But I do think they are getting better. And I do think the cream of the crop is starting to rise to the top. Like a high fee environment really sharpens all swords as far as naming goes. So I do feel like the average quality is not getting better, but the highest percentile quality I do think is getting better. So far, there's only been a couple, you know, really offensive runes. Even those were not that bad. So yeah, fingers crossed. But
more than a couple, I've scrolled through some of these. But now what? I mean, there's 7,995. I mean, but and do you have a favorite so far?
My favorite is probably not mentionable on this podcast.
Okay.
I wrote a NSFW just absurd story a long time ago that's on my blog, and people found that story and then they created a meme coin based on the events of that story. And so I like that one just because it's creative and deeply offensive.
And I mean, just we can wrap it here, and thanks again for being with us, Casey. But you know, just kind of a postscript. I think you've mentioned that runes you've delivered to the world, the degens are using it, and it sounds like there's not a lot more that you think or want to do with runes per se. And I think you mentioned that you were thinking about a file sharing protocol as your next project. Curious if that's accurate and why that?
Well, I mean, I've worked on Bitcoin stuff for a while now. I don't actually have any like super clever ideas about if I was going to do something on Bitcoin, what my next project would be. I like copy things, right? Like I saw NFTs on other chains and I was like, okay, maybe I can design a better version for Bitcoin. And then I saw BRC20s on Bitcoin and I was like, well, this offends my technical sensibilities, so let me design something better for Bitcoin. Maybe I'll have a super clever idea about something to do on Bitcoin, but I do not have any such clever ideas at the moment. And file sharing has always been near and dear to my heart as a lifelong...
Why that?
Just a lifelong pirate, you know, pirating content since my early days. I really dislike copyright. I don't think that copyright is a net benefit to the world. I think the terms are absolutely insane. Like the fact that copyright lasts for more than 10 years, I think is just an absolute absurdity, just an insane absurdity. Like, yeah, so don't like copyright, don't like the major rights holders. The sort of the user experience on streaming platforms has kind of gotten worse and worse as they've started to balkanize. It kind of used to be that there's a small number of platforms that you could watch all the content on if you paid the subscription fee. Now they're more and more fragmented. Fees are higher and higher. I think that this has to do with the poor user experience of existing file sharing technologies. The most popular ones right now are probably BitTorrent and Usenet. And those both have not great user experiences for a newbie. And so I think that I can probably improve on the user experience of those. Of those technologies, just sort of improve the file sharing user experience and draw some normie users to the high seas.
And does that have anything to do with Bitcoin?
No, not at all. No blockchain, no cryptocurrency. If somebody tells you, like, file sharing cryptocurrency projects, anything related to that are my least favorite. They're so stupid. Filecoin, dumbest shit on earth, like unreal. Like, there's no reason you want to trade files over the internet. You want to store data. There's no reason you need to put a blockchain anywhere near that. Like, there's no reason you need to do proof of work on your like downloaded movies. So yeah, file sharing doesn't benefit from a token, doesn't benefit from a blockchain, like all these other applications, right? Like metaverse plus blockchain is worse than metaverse on its own. Like, you mean I need a token to connect to the metaverse? So yeah, no, this is a pure file sharing project. No cryptocurrency, no blockchain whatsoever.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, Casey? I mean, you know, top of mind?
No, just got to shill the pod. Go watch Hell Money Podcast, where we find podcasts are sold. Aaron literally like watches my like media appearances. And if I don't shill the podcast, then she beats me. So yeah, just got to do that. But yeah, it's been great talking to you guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Casey. Really appreciate it. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps our episode for today. Thank you so much for Casey Rodemar from Runes and Ordinals, creator of Runes and Ordinals. It's kind of, you know, kind of a mouthful, Casey. I feel like you need a condensed, you know, title.
Yeah.
But and thanks to our producer Michelle Musso and our booker Mel Montañez. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening to the Protocol Podcast. If you have any questions about any stories or comments, please reach out to us at podcasts@coindesk.com. Subject line: The Protocol. You can listen to us weekly on CoinDesk Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, please subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The Protocol, on CoinDesk.com. See you next week.